There's no question that Phish were one of the most revered bands of the 90s and early 2000s. Their millennial celebration in a Florida swamp was the world's largest, and their farewell in Coventry, Vermont in 2004 was an emotional event for the fans and the band that both are still recovering from. Lead singer and primary writer of the band, Trey Anastasio, is with us today, and in this interview, for the first time, talks about the role the drugs had in the breakup of the band. We start with this acoustic performance of Shine.
You know, all of you know, to grow, what to be on, and so follow below. You are what you lean on. Drift in still water. Whoa. And the light shines on what we all ride on. When the days come and gone, you know we all ride on. Lines figure the ground. You surf, and it's real. To soar over and down, to bend and to breathe on. Whoa. And the light shines on what we all ride on. When the days come. Beyond falling, with sounds of bells all ringing out, we'll ride on. Slipped over the blue lining, springs alive to circle down. Whoa. And the light shines. We all ride on. When the days come and gone, you know we all ride on. And the light shines on what we all ride on. When the days come and gone, you know we all shine.
That is the title track and the first thing many of us heard from Shine, the new, as you say, singer-songwriter album. And there seems to be a couple elements and things I want to talk about. I do want to talk about the effect on you of breaking up Phish and how that all happened. But before we talk about that, let's kind of jump a little bit and talk about your decision to make this kind of a singer-songwriter album, and where that came from, and making a big, really powerful kind of statement with this thing.
The songs grew out of the lyrics, you know.
And you had never written your own lyrics before?
No, that's a revisionist history myth that's come about because of the fact that I guess this is the first record that I wrote all the lyrics.
Right, right.
I wrote probably most of the lyrics on my last solo record, and most of the lyrics on the first couple or few, you know, a lot of the Phish songs that I wrote, I didn't record. That might have had something to do with it, but AC/DC Bag and Sloth and all those, I wrote all that stuff. So I've written lyrics along the way, and there's never been a Phish album that I didn't write at least one song when I had something to say. I mean, that's the thing with me is I just kind of wake, I like writing for the process in this particular period in time with all the changes that have happened. I found myself writing a lot of lyrics.
When you made the decision to break Phish up, and can we put that decision on you, or is that fair?
you can put the somebody had to come forward and say something. There were some real deeply embedded problems that, and also some great things. I know that if Fish and Page were here, you know, when I sat down at a table and said, I think we should stop this thing, they both said, thank God, you know, was at the time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But we had, the decision was made from a place of love for Fish, and that's been a hard message to describe. We got confused and things got kind of dark in ways that we didn't anticipate, and we were surprised because you know, we've been really careful over the years to avoid many of the pitfalls that happen. So,
well, in finally deciding to do it though, the impacts are people don't think about this. Oh yeah, well, we'll just break up the band. But you had an organization.
Yes.
Yeah, you had.
Well, see, that's
people's lives, and I was wondering how that affected you. You know, if indeed you were the one that finally said put it on the table.
I mean, it was pretty much the whole thing. That's what's been very difficult with, you know, my relationship with the Fish audience, who I had a very close relationship with from stage. I think that's what was special about Fish, mm-hmm. was our relationship with the audience, and the fans that came and saw us. We felt like this was like a big family, you know what I mean? But I felt a lot of pressure because when we tried to take a hiatus, I know now that a year has gone by and the smoke has sort of cleared. When I talked to people who were, you know, our business manager, our booking agent, people like that were kind of watching from the outside, they will all say, you know, when you guys came back, I knew nothing had changed. The essential problems had not been addressed. And so it had to be done, and it had to be done with kind of firm language that this is about music and it's about the four of us and our friendship and our chemistry is what people were responding to. And really then our relationship with the audience. And it feels like a lot of those problems have been addressed now.
Right, right.
Like, I mean, it worked. So,
well, now, how did your emotional reaction to all that make their way into these songs? And how did that happen for you?
Well, it was confusing a period of time, and I was just writing. Some of these songs, I didn't really know what they're about. Our general scene around the band had grown very large, to the point where when we did our last concert, I think our guest list was something like 3,000 people. And I'm not exaggerating. We had, you know, giant, and it was so fun. Please don't let me say it wasn't fun, but it started to become, to eat itself. The scene started to sort of devour itself.
It sounds like Jerry Garcia and the Dead to me.
It was a lot like that. Yeah. You know, they were a huge influence on us. And that's why I said it was surprising, because we always thought, well, we're going to take everything that we love about those guys and not let, you know, try to not fall into the same traps. And then lo and behold, we kind of did, but
yeah,
we, you know, got out of it and it's been great. And
so what was happening? What was so problematic I just looked at it from the outside and thought, Jesus, it's been a long time. There must be a bunch of things.
Oh yeah. I mean, a lot of things were going on. On the one hand, there was the kind of scariness of how large things had gotten. And on the other hand, the scene, you know, we had some problems with our personal health. You know, people were not healthy. I think that was kind of obvious to people who were around. And for some reason, I don't end up talking about this a whole lot, but for a long time, all through the 80s and 90s, there was no drugs around the Fish scene at all. As in terms of the four of us, we were very, I mean, there was, you know, kind of mild partying going on and stuff. But the last few years, just like a plague of locusts, our scene was pretty much overrun. And without, you know, belaboring turning this into a behind the music.
Right.
I mean, things got very quickly completely out of control. You know, we did our little experimenting along the way, and
yeah,
but it really is amazing to see how insidious that is. As soon as the doors open and that comes around, I mean, it takes over so quickly. And it just, you know, we tried taking a hiatus and it didn't work. And so it was like, we got to stop. And that's the funny thing. Like, I'm just going to say this because I guess it's kind of weird that I haven't really talked about this throughout the whole promotion of this album. And I hate that word because, you know, music is music. It shouldn't be really promoted. But, you know, some of these songs, when I talk about the scene, are about my friends. It wasn't necessarily the Fish scene. You know, drugs come around and stuff. That's the scene. That's your, becomes your life. And it happened very over the course of probably about 4 or 5 years. And so sometimes that's what I mean. I didn't even know what some of these songs were about until like a year later, and kind of looking back and thinking, I'm talking about the gang that I used to hang out in the dark room with. It got pretty bleak, you know, and it's not anymore. And that's the reason that it was hard to deal with the anger from the fans. And I accept it, and I want people to be angry. Go right ahead. But the thing is that I spent the last 2 days ago hanging out with Mike and Fish and laughing, and it felt just like old times. Well, it didn't, trust me, the last couple of years. I mean, we didn't talk. It was, you know, not because we didn't like each other, but because we were in the middle of this thing that had like an inertia all its own. Everybody was worried about each other, and it was no good. And I hope that if I write a song like Sleep Again, you know, it helps somebody who's in that situation, because I was there and I know what it was like. And it's taken me a year to figure out what was going on. All I knew at that point in time was it was life or death. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. Trust me, my mom and dad were thrilled when Fish broke up. Mm. I mean, they were like virtually in tears of joy. And so was, you know, Amy Skelton, who was our first fan. And yet I still love Fish. It's very confusing, the whole thing, but it had to happen. Everybody chilled out and now we're friends again. But like I said, people who have been, you know, anybody that's been kind of caught up in that kind of darkness knows exactly what I'm talking about, that you can't really explain what happens. You're simultaneously losing your own perspective and kind of going away from all your friends. You're kind of disappearing.
That's a pretty good explanation, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Well, do a song that you is particularly heartfelt for you from this. It might kind of relate to some of the things we're talking about.
I'd like to do this one that I like a lot. It's called Sleep Again. Slow, my brother, you will sleep again. Long, when it passes, you will breathe again. Snow falls, oh, and it passes. Sleep again. Slow, slow, my brother, you will sleep again. Hold on, when it passes, you will breathe again. Snow falls, oh, and it passes.
I'm sitting over here smiling because it's really interesting to hear these songs stripped all the way back and hear you do them just acoustically. Was this the way they were all?
Yeah.
Wow. So when you went to producer Brendan O'Brien, I'm also interested in why you chose him, but this is what he heard.
You know, the first thing he said was I enjoyed working with him very much. And if you're asking why I went down there, I was very impressed with a couple of people that he worked with, Rage Against the Machine. I thought he did an excellent job of maintaining their energy and their spirit. And I thought he did a great job with Bruce Springsteen on The Rising. So he did, I went to his house and he said, okay, here's a guitar. We need 12 songs. And that may not seem like such a novel idea, but I realized that I had not gone through that process with any producer ever again, where he said, here's a guitar. We're not going to start recording until you can sing me 12 songs. And in the process, we ended up, you know, he ended up working with me on some of the stuff, and it was great.
So, now, what did he look for? When did he say, okay, that's a song?
I had written so many songs during this year, a song called Bar 17 that I love very much. It was about the last couple of years with Fish. And he didn't react at first, so I just said, all right, here's another one. I have a little philosophy whenever I make a record, and it's that I'm making a record. I'm not making the record. That you're making the record at that time, but sometimes I think that a lot of the, you can't do everything in one record, so you do whatever your heart's telling you at that period in time.
Now I'm smiling because I know that one of the people, you talked about The Rising, but one of the people you talked about kind of in helping you make a decision on what to do was Bruce Springsteen. And we're talking on the day that Born to Run was reissued. And if there was, ever was an album that was the record.
Right. And it ended up not being the record.
Right. That's true.
In his mind at that point in time, it was the record because I bought it the day it came out. If it wasn't the day it came out, it was the day afterwards. And, you know, Nebraska may be the record.
Right. There you go.
And, you know, he couldn't have made Nebraska if he hadn't made the very difficult decision of leaving the E Street Band. And he told me that when I got to meet him.
Did you ask him about that, or did he just come out and talk about
it? Came right out and said it.
Wow.
Now, he may have met Brendan or whatever, and I mean, because they worked together, but he knew what he wanted to say. And he said, you know, I had a great live band myself. And he said, what he said was, as soon as you're celebrated for something, that very thing that people are celebrating starts to become crystallized. So you have to remain flexible and make changes. And then what he said was that when I was the guy who wrote about cars and girls, I had to stop being the guy who wrote about cars and girls. And the result, of course, was like I said, Nebraska was one of my favorite records. Yep. And then, you know, The Rising, which is, if you really listen to the lyrics on that record, is heart-wrenching. Heart-wrenching. It amazes me that somebody could have written that song at that period in time from that perspective.
Trey Anastasio is our guest, and we're talking about Shine, his new album and his new work. And we're talking about Bruce Springsteen and his old and new work. And go ahead, let's hear another one. I love hearing these things acoustically.
Okay. Seems thin, but it sure feels good. 'Cause it's the best I've seen when you fall down good. Sink in the water, but you walk it on wood. This time, what are you waiting for? Is it your time to walk away? Because the law's unseen, level's all good, hurdles all down like another time would. 'Cause it's the best I've seen when you fall down good, sink in the water but you're walking on wood. Walking on wood. Last time seen, walking on wood downstream, like a long time show. Now we're invisible, so all that's good. The law's unseen, levels all good. Downstream, drifting like a long time show. Now we're invisible, so all that's good. Next time, and I could wait forever, all times, because I thought I'd never wrap that scene like I knew that I should. It all seems thin, but it sure feels good. 'Cause it's the best I've seen when you fall down good, sink in the water, but you're walking on. Walking on wood. Last time, walking on wood, now we're invisible. Last time, walking on wood, now we're invisible. Last time, walking on wood, now we're invisible. Last time, walking on wood.
When I was listening and not looking, I kept calling that Walking on Wood, but it is indeed invisible from
it was going to be called Walking on Wood. I wrote that after Coventry, which was our last show, and it was very muddy, very muddy. It was very nearly a disaster because they almost canceled it. Yeah. It rained for 2 weeks, but everywhere that we walked, the four of us, they were laying plywood down so we wouldn't get our feet muddy. And that little image came to me because people were so mad at me, and many, many people backstage and out in the audience. And I felt like, wow, like a week ago, I was walking on water. And now you're all, and it was really kind of a good feeling, I got to tell you.
I cannot imagine going through that. It's funny. People talk about the image of selling out. And in this case, selling out would
Believe
have been
me,
continuing.
I was making a hell of a lot more money
than
I am now. If I sold out, I have yet to be paid for selling out.
Exactly. That's what's so funny about it. So, anyway.
I was staying in a much nicer hotel last time I was in Philadelphia. Not to take anything away from the fine people who are running the hotel where I'm staying. But.
Trey Anastasio is here, and he's got an acoustic guitar. Okay, what do you want to finish up with?
I'm going to do a song called Tuesday. And that's what we're going to do. In the summer, slow dancing with the trees all around. I'm spinning in the breeze with my Marianne. I like to see you when the sun goes down. One day, maybe Tuesday evening, I'm dancing with the trees all around. One day, and the spin slows down. Slow colors as we lift through the canopy, still laughing with the hair all around. I'm spinning in the trees with my Marianne, flipped over and we drift on down. One day, maybe Tuesday evening, she comes running when her baby comes round. One day, the beat slowed down, I'm dancing with the trees all around. One day, with the beat slowed down, one day. Can feel it all around. One day when the beat slows down. One day and I can see it somehow. One day when the beat slows down. Rose water is my drink in the summer. I love to see her with her hair hanging down. Slow dancing in the trees with my Marianne. She comes running when a baby comes round. One day I can feel it all around. One day when the beat slows. In the summer, slow dancing with the trees all around. One day, and you can feel it all around. One day, and the beat's slow down. One day, and I can see it somehow. One day, and the beat's slow down. One day.
Tuesday. I'm so glad you did that because that's my favorite on the record.
Thank you.
I think we might have
messed up a little bit with that. Do you forgive us?
Yeah, you're forgiven. But I love lines like, slow colors as we lift through the canopy. And it's just, there's all these, the water and natural images. What's the song about? It sounds like who knows?
About falling in love.
Yeah, okay, you go.
It's halfway. Sometimes I think it's...
I take it too literally, but yeah, there you go.
But it's, I do sometimes. I have two beautiful, beautiful daughters. I'm very blessed. I have an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old. It's kind of halfway about falling in love and halfway about being with them. Like, I play this song sometimes and I'll spin around with them, holding their hands, and just the look on their face, sheer joy. And I think that's
cool
what it's
song.
About, maybe.
Trey, thanks a lot for
thank you so much
coming by.
Keep your station great, which it is.
We'll do our best. We'll be back in a moment here on the World Cafe.